What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome to another episode of the Packer Report podcast, this time without the great Gilbert Brown. Gilbert is off this week. We hope to bring him back next week, but in his place, we have Packer Report, Acme Packing Company. What other media designations am I missing? Host of the Locked On Packers podcast, Peter Bukowski. Peter, did I miss anything?
No, we'll go with that list. It's a good list. Thanks for having me, Ross.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Peter Bukowski stepping in for Gilbert this week because we wanted to do kind of a off-season recap or a free agency recap. It's certainly not over. I think there's a just sent out a tweet. I think there's a move that could be made, hopefully, on the interior defensive line to bring in another D lineman with some guys available. But the Packers have really hit, and that's kind of the first thing that we're going to talk about. The Packers have really hit their needs in an effective way, in a cheap way, in an inexpensive way, no question. But they've done a soft reset on the needs of the team as far as signing guys that don't affect their cap, that aren't long-term commitments, but that provide at least depth, if not a starter, but at least depth and competition at roster spots you definitely would have identified as a need coming into the offseason, that being, of course, offensive tackle, linebacker, wide receiver, and return man. And so those four guys being Rick Wagner, brought in from the Lions, formerly of the Ravens, and formerly of the Wisconsin Badgers, and then Christian Kirksey at linebacker, followed by Devin Funchess. I'm starting to sense a Big Ten feel here. And then Tyler Irvin was re-signed and brought back on a pretty inexpensive contract as far as his kind of gadget running back role and return man role.
Do we have to go Christian Kirksey, Iowa? Are we there?
Yeah, yet? I think, and that was, I was sending Matt Schneidman a message saying, hey, if you can teach Christian how to say Iowa when he gets here, just so there's no break, that would be fantastic. Right.
Yeah, all the points that you made are right on. I mean, the Packers did not make a splash signing, right? And I think a lot of Packer fans are annoyed by that. They didn't really have the space to do it. And when you look at the money out there, for example, Emmanuel Sanders gets $8 million a year. Well, Christian Kirksey and Rick Wagner combined are going to count $8 million on the Packers cap this year. Would you rather have two starters or a wide receiver too? Now, there are going to be some fans who say, I'd rather have the receiver. But I think that is more a failing of people like you and I to explain that that's not how roster building really works. And a 33-year-old receiver at that point in his career, maybe not worth that money the way that two quality starters could be. But this isn't going to affect how they go into the draft, is it? I mean, what do you think this means for them moving into the draft?
I think so. What's the smartest? I think one of the smarter, simpler theories or sayings, whatever you want to call it, is sign for need, draft for talent, or draft the best player that you can. And teams don't do that. Teams draft for need. Let's not kid about that. But I think that basic premise applies to Brian Gutekunst a lot more than it applies to Ted Thompson. And that's what I think he's done, is sign the guys you need. You know, if the draft doesn't happen, and this is kind of in these strange times, you never know. But they have announced that it's going to go on as normally scheduled. But if the draft doesn't happen, you know, take care of the absolute holes on your roster. And that is what Brian Gutekunst has pretty much done. I know people probably maybe still see that second defensive lineman next to Mike Daniels as a potential hole, or excuse me, next to, I got Mike Daniels on my mind, next to Kenny Clark as a hole, because Mike Daniels is available. Maybe they see the linebacker next to Christian Kirksey as a hole, or depth, because Christian Kirksey gets hurt a lot as a whole. But really, outside of that, and maybe tight end, although you just drafted a guy in the top 100, after the Funchess signing, there's no really like, okay, that is a gaping hole where it's it's possible that a below average NFL player is definitely going to start there. It's not going to be, you know, that's not going to happen at corner. That's not going to happen at safety. It's pretty much not going to happen at wide receiver. That they've at least got functional NFL players at most of the important spots, you know, and you might say, well, Rick Wagner had a rough season. That's fine. But the four seasons before that, he was an average to above average NFL right tackle. So now I think while they still might prioritize a long-term replacement for Wagner, they still might prioritize Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen. They still might prioritize a position that we would have said before any of these signings was a priority. They don't have to now. A guy like if a Grant Delpit slides, a guy that maybe they see in the top, or an Xavier McKinney, maybe they see a safety that should have been a top 15 pick that drops, or one of the four really good. They would have drafted tap, but you know what I'm saying, Peters. They, if opportunity smacks them in the face, they can now, you know, if opportunity knocks, they can answer the door, as opposed to we are absolutely out of luck if we do not take a right tackle at 30.
Yeah, and it's flexibility, right? I mean, that's really what we're talking about. They go into the draft thinking that whoever they think is the most talented player, almost irrespective of position, you can make the case that they're going to be the most impactful. I try and make this point as often as I possibly can. The idea of best player available is a myth. And it's not just a myth. It's actually a bad idea. It's not just your highest graded player. It is the player who can make the biggest impact on your team over the life of their rookie contract. So you have to take into account things like opportunity. Are they going to play? What position do they play? And if they play, are they going to impact the game in a consistent way? So when you have these starters, it's similar to the position that Green Bay was in last year. And I think people do forget this because of the weird season that they had. After free agency, there was not a gaping hole, same way that there isn't now, on the roster. They had, really, 22 starters. And so almost everyone they picked, with the exception of Darnell Savage, the safety position was the only place where they didn't have a guy. They had Amos, but they didn't really have a second guy. Everyone else was picked to be a backup, really. And that looks like it's going to be the case again this year. So worrying about, oh, well, they're going to play in year one or not, we don't really have to think about that as we project this forward because, as you said, the Packers have these guys. So you sit there in the first round, and if you'd only signed Christian Kirksey and Devin Funchess, you probably feel like an offensive tackle is going to be the most impactful guy. So you feel more, not obligation, but you have more incentive to prioritize that. Now you can just prioritize the most talented player, which is the position, by the way, every front office wants to be in, and that a front office rarely finds itself in.
For sure. And I think, you know, it's even funny because our theory sounds great. And then last year, the Packers just kind of smacked us in the face with it because we're thinking, okay, edge rusher's set.
Right.
Safety's probably, maybe not set, but they at least got a safety. And the three highest profile signings that they made were the two positions they took in the first round. And maybe that is, you know, maybe that happens again.
In the second round.
Yeah, exactly. They draft what Turner was in the second round, and by then they've already also redrafted the free safety spot and the edge spot. And maybe that happens again, guys. Like, maybe, you know, don't be blown away if it's Kenneth Murray and Ezra Cleveland. And right. And you know, I think people would really be frustrated with that because of the wide receiver group, but you know, don't be surprised if that happens again, but it doesn't have to happen again. And I think that was really, in my opinion, the important thing about what the Packers did this offseason was they don't need – I mean, they probably do. I would say wide receiver is still a need. I mean, they do need to bring in gifted, talented people. And honestly, I think unless they really are just going to build this entire – you know, talk about build the entire plane out of the black box. Unless they're going to just build the entire plane out of 6'3", 6'4" receivers, they really do need to bring in a different type of guy, I think. I think there needs to be some diversity in what they're doing. having Devin Funchess, Alan Lazard, MVS on the field with Davante Adams is a lot of the same. And that said, you know, Michael Pittman might be the pick at 62.
They're going to draft Michael Pittman Jr. Is that what you're saying?
But
by the way, he's really, really good. And if they draft him, we'll play right away and be a meaningful player. I think he's
absolutely awesome. No, for sure. For sure. I think that our point is taken in the sense that if it is and I know you don't like this, but if it is an interior defensive lineman that they love, or if it does happen to be a wide receiver in round one and Justin Jefferson falls, or as has been reported, they do love Denzel Mims. Well, you can do that now because you have Rick Wagner and Christian Kirksey. And if a guy that they love, you know, maybe they just are absolutely in love with Epineza from Iowa, and he keeps falling because of poor testing, which doesn't make sense for the Packers. But I'm talking about that kind of player, somebody that everybody thinks should have gone in the top 15, like Brian Bulaga, frankly, who now has left the team. Brian Bulaga, if you go back to the 2010 draft and I know that's a long time now, but Peter, there wasn't a mock draft that didn't have Bulaga going somewhere in the top 10 or 12. And I believe Green Bay was able to take him at 23 or something like that.
Yeah.
So if a fall like that happens, almost regardless of position, and maybe it's Justin Herbert or, you know, if whoever QB3 is for you.
You know that I'm in on Justin Herbert. So if unless you want to go down that road, don't go down that road with me.
But the point that Peter and I are making is that now that the Packers have at least – And I can't tell you how valuable this is. Now that the Packers have at least competent NFL players at, I would say, 21 of the 22 positions, just because if you're playing 11 personnel, and maybe 20 of the 22 positions, because let's call tight end pending. I mean, you could play big dog there, and I guess it's fine. But we could call tight end kind of pending. And then the third wide receiver, I maybe could use an infusion of talent. But as far as your actual
starters there that you feel good about, if it's Adams, Funchess, and Lazard, you feel fine about that. As your those three are better than any three you would have put on the field last year, right?
Sadly, true. I mean, seriously, and that, you know, that's an argument, and I think that's a good time to kind of let's delve into the Funchess discussion, because I believe. By the time Gilbert and I did discuss the Wagner and Kirksey signing. So let's talk about Devin Funchess, because that's something that I think you and I and multiple folks have really struggled with Packer fans. The discussion around him potentially being a minimum salary player, the idea that, you know, he was just given $10 million by the Colts, and I think a lot of Packers fans, because whether it's, I don't care if it's Pro Football Focus, I don't care if it's NFL.com, I don't care if it's CBS, but I think a lot of Packers fans had, you know, and honestly, I could be at fault too. It could have been the Packers free agency big board, because Devin was not listed. And just because he wasn't, you know, I was only listing 25 to 30 guys a time. And they get in their minds these names, right? And so right away it was Amari Cooper, you know, because that would have been nuclear cool. And then after that, it was really Robbie Anderson. And I think that would have made a ton of sense, not at what he got paid, but I think it would have made a ton of sense. And then it was Emmanuel Sanders. And you and I disagree on Emmanuel Sanders, just because the way that he fits into the offense and the way that he complements Davante Adams, I think would have been phenomenal. I think it makes a ton of sense that they were one of the final three teams that he spoke to. I thought a trade for Emmanuel Sanders made sense. All of this, of course, depending on cost. But as a player, I thought he would have been just a phenomenal fit. And you really look at some of the clips from practice and stuff, the way that he was working with and teaching those younger San Francisco receivers, I really thought that would have fit in Green Bay. But I understand he's 33 years old. I get all that. That's great. Emmanuel Sanders doesn't come. Okay, now everybody's really, really zoning in on Robbie Anderson and, for some godforsaken reason, Rashad Perriman. And those were those two guys were kind of viewed as the last starters, if you will, or the last guys that, you know, were able to really make an impact. And they signed Funchess, and boom, Brashad Perriman signs for $6 million somewhere. And
$6 million Robbie, that could be $8 million.
Right. $6 million that could be $8 million. And then poof, Robbie Anderson is gone for 2 years, 20, 12 in the first year in cash. I don't know what the cap hit looks like, but the bottom line is it's not Perriman and it's not Anderson. It's Devin Funchess. And immediately we can't separate. He's a bum. He's this, he's that. And I just, I struggle with that. And hey, guess what? He can't separate. You know, right. You and I both went into the tape, but
yeah.
He wins in other ways. And frankly, as I've droned on about almost ad nauseum, even his, what you would call a down year, where he was benched for two games and only played 14 in total, where he had 44 catches, 549 yards, and four touchdowns, that would have been the second best performance mm-hmm. from a wide receiver last year for Green Bay. Yeah. His season prior to that, 2017, was a borderline number one guy year. 63 yeah. catches, 840 yards, and eight touchdowns. What did you see? And I'll get into to mine after you go here. But what did you see in the Devin Funchess tape when you went back and looked at games?
You know, it's funny because I was expecting my mental picture of Devin Funchess to show up a little bit more than he did. I came away much more impressed than I remembered being. And that's probably that 2018 season locked in my mind because early in his career, I mean, there was a game where he lit up the Packers, beat them on a deep touchdown. And I'm like, how did a guy who runs 4.7 just get deep alone in the middle of the field against this Packers secondary? And you're just going, wait, I thought he couldn't run. Now he proved in the 3 years that followed that and that rookie season that he can move. It's not that he can't move. I think separation in some ways can be overrated depending on the kind of player you are. People, you know, this is particularly relevant right now because we think about separation in college. Yes, you want separation, but in the NFL, you're going to get less of it. And what you need to be able to do is overcome it. You need to be able to make adversity plays. You need to be able to do things like shield the defender from the ability to get to the ball. It's something that you talked about in some of the video clips that you posted on Twitter, right? His ability, especially on in-breaking routes, to just shield the defender and just say, there's no way I'm going to let you make a play on this ball because I'm just bigger and stronger than you, and give his quarterback a lane. That is a really valuable thing to have, even if you're not, you know, crossing that guy up at the top of your route. You don't have to do that every play. Sometimes you just need to be big and strong and have good body control. He has really good body control for a guy his size. He can make plays on the sidelines. He can make back shoulder throws or back shoulder catches. He can make plays with guys draped all over him. And I made the joke when they announced the signing on Twitter, let him play tight end. And after watching him, I was like, no, he can play receiver. And he probably is right now the second, two and a half, third best receiver on this team. And maybe that says more about the other guys and how they've shown to this point. But I liked the signing last year for the Colts. I liked it, probably erroneously so, better than what the Bills did at their receiver position. But I just thought, He can be a starter. He can be a high level number two. I don't know if that's still true, but remember, he's what, 26? Like, it's not like this guy is 33.
Right. No, I mean, he's going to turn 26 in May. And I mean, that's kind of where I'm at, right? It's like, we keep talking about functional NFL players, and I hate to say it, but you know, only in very limited spurts is Jake Kumerow a functional NFL player.
Right.
For all of the, you know, for how cool that highlight was where he kind of did the Donald Driver thing in the Bears mm-hmm. game, there are 60, 70 snaps, 50 snaps, probably not 60, 70, but there are 40, 50 snaps in other games of him not creating separation and not getting the ball thrown his way. And you don't think about it as a casual fan. You don't talk about it because the ball is going a different way, but there are snaps of him just being unproductive. And you can, I mean, the guy is not, people talk about him like he's some story, and yeah, it's cool that he's from a Division III school in Wisconsin, and it's cool that he hasn't given up on his dream. But, you know, at the general point is, guys, he's like almost 30 years old. This is not some untapped potential guy. And one player that was on the field a ton who was just not a functional NFL player was Geronimo Allison. And I'm not going to be completely blown away if he doesn't sign. And I know that sounds mean, but I think there is certainly a world in which he just isn't in the league. I mean, because Green Bay is not going to bring him back at this point.
No.
And I don't know as though – I could be wrong, but I don't know as though his 2019 film – and frankly, complete and utter lack of athletic upside is going to convince another team, you know what? He needs to be in camp. You know, we can't replicate what Geronimo Allison does in undrafted free agency or late in the draft. Let's not draft a guy in the sixth round. Let's bring in Geronimo. I don't know if that happens, you know, because.
Well, he'll make a good Chicago Bear, Ross.
Yeah, it's something the Vikings would have done, you know, in years past, certainly, certainly. But yeah, I mean, so what I saw from Funchess, and guys, this is over at Packer Report. It is a VIP piece just because it is kind of a more in-depth film breakdown. But
you should be subscribed already.
Yeah, you guys really should. On the high end of things, you know, we saw, I think, really – how to put this, impressive hands, in the sense that you can always tell with a wide receiver what they're in a clutch situation, what is their primary function, what's their go-to, and that's body catching or not, and his is not. He plucks the ball, he catches it away from his frame. Are there concentration drops? Yes. Does he make every tough catch? No. But fundamentally, he is sound as a catcher of a football, he plucks the ball. And that is something, especially if you can get the concentration drops, which sometimes those are like the yips in golf or a slump in baseball. Sometimes that stuff just goes away. You can ask Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson about that. You can even ask James Jones. As your career progresses and you just, you know, you get beyond that point. He's got really good fundamentals as the way he catches the football. His catch radius is phenomenal. And this is a relatively pro Cam Newton podcast, but that man is not an accurate thrower of the football.
No.
His catch radius was tested. And just so you guys know, what I did for Funchess is I watched his nine targets, five or nine, I can't remember. Anyway, he had single-digit targets in the Colts game against the Chargers, in which he broke his collarbone and was lost for the season. And that was his only 2019 tape. Then I went back to 18 and 17 and watched Pro Football Focus's three best-graded and one worst-graded games of his career. So I could see, you know, because the importance of scouting people, the number one thing that's important is find out what he can do. Don't tell me what he can't do, because that's, it's relatively unimportant. What can he do? What can he bring to your team? What can he bring to your offense? And so that's why we watched three good games and one bad, which ended up being obviously 6-2, to see what the problems really, you know, really were. And so on the good side, you've got the catch radius, you've got the hands, you've got the size, the ability to shield defenders on in and out breaking routes. And what are the struggles? Well, very little separation, very little vertical juice. I mean, he's not stacking anyone. That was one thing I said, even on deep routes, I'm never like, oh, well, he gets them stacked here, and now the corner's in trail position. The corner's never in trail position. It's always a contested catch, but he makes contested catches, you know, quite a bit. And obviously, you know, one of the main issues then is concentration drops and that lack of separation. But overall, as we've seen, he's a 25 turning 26 year old player with an 850 yard season, 850 yard, eight touchdown season under his belt. And the other thing I think to give Packers fans a little bit of hope, a little bit of juice heading into this Funchess signing is, I got to tell you, he was treated as WR1, both by the Panthers as far as volume of targets and by the opposing teams. I watched, it just so happened, I think 1 year it was one of the three best graded, and the next year it was one of the worst graded. I watched him play Detroit twice, and guess who followed him around the field the entire time? Darius Slay. I mean, he was treated, and it wasn't just them. I mean, he got the Desmond Trufant treatment from the Falcons every time they played them too.
He got open on Darius Slay too, and that it was not just garbage. Like he beat him a couple times, and it was like, oh, okay. Because Darius Slay, as you're saying, is not a bum. Like that is a real legit top five, top 10 type NFL corner.
For sure. And that's something too that I mentioned. He will never see the team's top corner in Green Bay. It just absolutely is not going to happen. He's going to be going up against different guys than he went up against when he was, you know, whatever you want to call it, when he was the dude in Carolina. There is no question that he is not the dude in Green Bay. He's probably, like you said, maybe wide receiver three, maybe wide receiver four. But I do think, as we've mentioned, that actually does, you know, mean an improvement of the roster. I mean, that he is, as wide receiver three or four, just a massive upgrade compared to what they had before. And I know, you know, some people, Geronimo was on pace for 1,000 yards through a game and a half. Okay, great, guys. We saw Geronimo in a full season last year. We just saw it. It was awful. Everybody hated it. And it was a rough deal. But let's move into the draft a little bit and talk about a specific guy that you and I disagree on, because I want to kind of get through that. But let's talk about strategy and kind of the finite resources, because this to me, Peter, feels like a Ted Thompson type of year type of draft where there's not a ton of early round ammo. There's a bunch of 6th and 7th round picks, but there's not a ton of early round ammo. Picking super late in the round, you know, waiting in rounds for picks, which has been a different thing than watching the draft in years past, but in recent years past. But what do you think Green Bay's basic strategy has to be here in these first three picks? Because that's where I think they have to really nail this class. I think with no significant addition, no impactful addition, and maybe Devin Funchess catches, you know, 60 balls, that'd be great. But I don't think anybody the Packers just signed is moving the needle. In fact, I just saw another analytics deal for how many wins above replacement lost or gained in free agency, and the G didn't move. It was right in the middle of the league, and it was static. It was not moving. They basically said
Green Bay, by the way, because Braga is a really good player, and yeah.
So, but the point that I'm making is just that there is not going to come improvement, or certainly drastic improvement, by losing Bulaga and Martinez and adding Funchess, Wagner, Kirksey. Certainly prime Kirksey is better than prime Martinez, but are we getting prime Kirksey? I don't know. The improvement to this year's club is going to come in two ways: through the draft and through the hopeful development of players drafted in 2017, 2018, and 2019. So what do you think the strategy looks like here in the first three rounds of this draft, where they actually are going to go and potentially get guys that will contribute before they start building depth in the roster in 4, 5, 6, and 7?
My priorities would be, and I think Green Bay's priorities are going to be, with the first three picks, you need to come away with a receiver and an offensive tackle. And, you know, I think, you know, there was a cool Pro Football Focus study that was done that in order to find a receiver in the 65th percentile, so a reasonable starter, not even a good starter, just a reasonable starter, in the first two rounds, you have a better than 50-50 chance of doing that at wide receiver. And it's still above 40 in the third round. And the hit rate of free agents is about 40%. So if you take a receiver anywhere in the top three, I know fans are going to be bummed if it's the third round guy. you still have a more likely chance of hitting on a useful starter than you would in free agency. It's the same kind of deal with offensive tackle. If you want a good one, history says probably take that guy early. And certainly we know that the chances of hitting on one are much higher. When you look back at the kinds of people that Green Bay was focusing their attention on at the combine, they were looking at linebackers at all positions of the draft. To me, I look at that, and I think you can, depending on your Rorschach test, you can look at it a number of different ways. But I think they're prepared to say, we have these other positions. We want to make sure we're ready to pull the trigger on one of these guys wherever we see the value. I don't think it's going to be there in the first round, and I don't think it's going to be there in the second round. I think we're looking at third, fourth, fifth rounds for linebackers. So there are other positions of need, offensive tackle and receiver, and this just happens to be a draft where in the top 60, there are some really, really good players who are going to be there, guys who can come in right away. And maybe Rick Wagner gets the Lane Taylor treatment, that by October 31st, you know, someone else is starting for them. I don't think that's out of the question at all. If they get an Ezra Cleveland or a Josh Jones, someone like that, I know that the latter would give Packer fans some PTSD with the name. Let's call him Joshua Jones. That's what I've been trying to do on the podcast. But, you know, there are certainly some places where I think they could see value. Let's say Zach Bond is someone, you know, now with Christian Kirksey, he can play a little bit inside. He can play a little bit on the outside. He can do the Clay Matthews thing that so many fans wanted. Let's say they love Antoine Winfield, despite the fact that he's smaller than they normally would prefer. I think if you want to do the thing with Darnell Savage, the Honey Badger role, why not just take the guy who is best suited to be the Honey Badger in the first place?
Come on my podcast and steal my stuff. Okay.
No, I'm giving you credit. I think it's a great idea, and I've talked about it a lot. I think it's a great idea. If you want to do that, then you know, I think that could make sense too. For me, linebacker is down the list of things that I would be worried about if I were the Packers, and I think frankly the Packers are going to feel the same way.
Yeah, I think too. I actually like, I mean, so we're kind of on the same lockstep, and this is going to drive Packers fans nuts because it has for 5 years. I just don't care. I mean, you look at who just won the Super Bowl. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl with two linebackers that can hardly run and frankly can't play. I mean, Hitchens and Ragland are not good, and no. Neither
is, and Hitchens is on a big money deal.
Yeah. And neither is Neiman, the kid from Iowa. The guy that I think it was, I think Rodgers got that insane throw to Jamal Williams on Neiman, but it's just not a premier position in the league. And frankly, I really liked, and then I know people love Ty Summers because of the athleticism and stuff. I thought Curtis Bolton was great. And I mean great, great. I think that right now that room of, man, he's an awesome athlete and he was a top 100 pick. Maybe we get something out of Oren Burks. Maybe we get something out of Christian Kirksey. Maybe we get something out of Ty Summers. And maybe we get something out of Curtis Bolton. Draft another, you know, maybe even just get a thumper, get a downhill thumper in round 4 or 5. They exist, I promise. One guy I kind of like and actually has decent athleticism is Joe Bache from Michigan State. Get him in round 5 or 6, whatever. Add another body to that crew, but I think you end up hitting on that. And frankly, you know, a lot of the top linebackers, as far as the way that they grade out, are mid to late round picks. It's not a ton of first round guys. I'm not in love with, frankly, either Patrick Queen or Kenneth Murray as prospects. I think they'd be fine picks at 30. I don't think they'd be franchise changing. I really like Troy Dye, but again, we're kind of getting off on a tangent here. I do think, as you've mentioned, that linebacker is a position where after Kirksey, they really only use one of them on the field. I think they're probably just kind of chilling. And then I think they feel, you know, if one falls to them, great. But if not, they'll depend on Burks or Bolton or Summers or Kirksey to show them something at that position. Because frankly, by the end of the year, what they were getting from Martinez was, you know, about replacement level football anyway.
Yeah, and this is, again, you said it. It's not going to make a lot of Packer fans happy. We're agreeing a little bit too much on the show.
Yeah.
So maybe we should move to a topic where we're going to disagree a little bit more. But
yeah,
I'm not in love with Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen either. And so at 30, again, I'm with you all the way. I think it would be good, not great. Let me ask you this before we move on, because I know there is a topic we're going to get to where we do disagree. Do you think, and we've said that we don't believe that what happened in free agency changes much about the draft. I will add one caveat to that. And that is the signing of Christian Kirksey makes it easier for me to say Zach Bond makes sense for the Packers at 30, because I am a huge Zach Bond fan. I think he makes more sense for a 4-3 team where he can be a Sam linebacker and play sort of the Von Miller role as a rookie, where he's going to play off the ball early and then on third downs, just let him go hunt QBs. But if you're the Packers, now you have an inside player. You have a signal caller for your defense. Add a versatile piece, someone who can play off the ball and rush the passer. Isn't that right in Mike Pettine's wheelhouse for these guys?
Yeah, I think. I mean, it's certainly not a role that has existed. I'm not sure that I'm going to count on Mike Pettine to be creative either. I just don't have a very high opinion of him, certainly after last season. But the thing with that is, yeah, I like the role. It's the role that I laid out for Clay Matthews when I, you know, talked about potentially bringing him in for no money, obviously. But yeah, I like it. I mean, I think you could certainly play, like, in a base set, I think you could certainly play Bond next to Kirksey, as long as, you know, nobody was taking a step backwards or side to side. I think they could run fit, certainly. And actually, Kirksey was a pretty decent coverage linebacker early in his career. He's not awful in space. But as then it moves to the later downs, like, I don't want Zach Bond in coverage, I don't think. And then you would have to move him down to a position where they already have two starters. But as, you know, in kind of the super factual role, I guess I like it, especially, you know, if you're playing, say you're playing 25% of the snap of the pass rush snaps, and then you're playing 80% of the early down snaps. Yeah, I think that's a useful role. And, you know, Preston and Zadarius aren't going to play forever, but they're also, I think,
it would basically,
you
know, be B.J. Goodson plus Kyler Fackrell. So you're playing,
yeah,
the
right
30% of snaps that they play base, and you're playing the other 20% of snaps where they play, you know, those three outside linebacker looks. By the way, last year, Mike Pettine's favorite formation was a 1-4-6. You teased me about this because in my tweet, I said 1-3-6, not enough players.
Yeah, not enough players.
Three outside linebackers in that 1-4-6. It was Blake, and then the Smiths, and usually Kyler Fackrell, sometimes Rashawn Gary. So if that's Zach Bond, that's the position group they play the most. So I think that it makes more sense now that they have Kirksey, which is the point, I think.
Sure. So let's move on to the thing that we disagree about, because what I talked about all last season, like, I complained to no avail or campaigned and it didn't go anywhere, but really wanted them to add Mike Pennell. I thought that made sense at the time. You know, obviously hindsight being 2020, I look like a genius now. There are receipts, people. There are tweets. There are podcasts. I promise there are receipts. Because he completely redefined the way that Kansas City played run defense and came in at no cost and, you know, was absolutely key in them winning the AFC Championship game by shutting down Derrick Henry. You know, again, run defenders are run defenders, but that particular run defender was a kind of a no cost thing and was an easy, you know, was an easy deal to do as far as what you had to give up. And frankly, the guys that he would have had to replace on Green Bay's roster, there was no reason that he could not get the Tyler Lancaster snaps. Tyler Lancaster is fine and is an excellent undrafted free agent find, but is in no way a player that you, oh man, we need to continue to develop Lancaster. We can't give Lancaster snaps away. Yeah, you can. I mean, again, he's a fine player, but not some superstar that you're developing for down the road. He's just not that guy. And so what I've been complaining about, and I'm still currently complaining about, is people see my tweet about an interior defensive lineman that I think can still help the team. They just need to get Kenny some help, especially if they're going to continue to play a one gap system where it's two down defensive linemen, you know, normally playing a 2-4-5. That other guy next to Kenny needs to do his job. And Dean Lowry is a little bit too high for that. I mean, I like him as a five tech that maybe plays a little bit of seven, you know, plays on the edge actually a little on early downs, but he's not an interior defensive lineman. And Montrevious Adams doesn't seem to have it. You know, we should have had the year three jump from Montrevious last year. We didn't get it. Even though it was kind of teased in camp, we didn't get it. And then, you know, it's a lot of GAG after that, or JAG. I don't think Kingsley Keke is ever going to affect the run game in a big time way. That's fine. Hey, interior pass rushers are worth their weight in gold, but that wasn't the team's main issue. And I'm not saying that they need to address the run side of things early, because I think that's nuts. I think you just go get your guy, whatever. But as far as a good defensive lineman that can either pass rush or do both, and that's the important thing, is the ability to do both. I do see that as both a team need and a prospect fit, specifically in Neville Gallimore. And my thing with Neville Gallimore, and you mentioned that he's, you know, in the sevens for RAS, doesn't have great agility times. Usually what the Packers care about is more on the defensive lineman side. It's the explosive, the vert and the broad, which his are good, his are fine. You'll see mediocre agility times in guys that have taken in the top 100, Kyrie Thornton, Justin Harrell, and that's a name that should sure bring a lot of people. We're just talking about people they have taken. And even in Kenny Clark, Kenny was a sevens RAS guy. He was not a freakazoid athlete, as I think most people would assume with how young he was and how high they took him. He was not a freakazoid athlete. And with Neville Gallimore, I really like his tape in the very rare moments that the Oklahoma Sooners actually did anything that made sense. If you get a chance to watch the end zone view, or even sometimes the TV broadcast, play after play after play, and I am talking about 60 to 70% of the plays, he is stemming or slanting or twisting or stunting, doing some sort of gap replacement where he is either, like I said, stemming and shifting right before the snap, or he is flat out running a twist, running a game, slanting, shooting. There, I saw so little get up the field and go, whether it was penetrate in the run game or jet rush. They never asked him to just go upfield. So for him to produce and succeed while basically always going sideways, all I could think of as I watched that tape was, my God, if they ever just let him go north and south, he is really twitchy as far as the way he plays. Now, I know he didn't test twitchy. I can see that. But the way that he plays football and the way that he's violent with his hands, the way that he gets upfield, he does have the juice. Now, I know you don't agree.
Well, here's the thing. It's funny. After we had our conversation on Twitter about it, I went back in my notes and I was just like, okay, let's see what, you know, how I really felt about it. And as I was going back through my notes, it sort of reads as a love letter to Neville Gallimore. But then at the end, I'm just sort of like, yeah, he's a good player. And it seems to me that the thing that I like about him is all the things that you said about him are right. The thing that stood out to me that I loved about him is he plays his ass off. He just is going to come hard every snap. He's going to chase. He's going to make a play, two or three plays every game. And you just know you can count on that. But then there are other parts of the game where he's not going to be able to do it because, you know, he's got length issues. He's got athleticism issues. And your point about the Packers types at defensive line is well taken to a point. That said, his 20-yard shuttle and agility times are in the sixth and second percentiles for defensive linemen. It's really, really bad. So
One of those two was improved greatly at his pro day.
Right. And that's fine. The other funny thing about his mock draftable page is Montrevious Adams and Kyrie Thornton are both on his similar types side of the ledger here. So he does in some ways fit the kind of player that the Packers like, just in terms of the profile in a vacuum. Look, it's fine on day two. I think that if the Packers had their druthers, their top three picks would be offensive tackle, receiver, and defensive line in some order. I fully intend for them to take a defensive lineman on day two or early on day three. That's where they did a ton of work at the combine. Basically, every day two, early day three defensive lineman in the draft had a meeting with the Packers. So I think their goal is to get someone there. In the first round, it would be lunacy to me. And that's more about the guys in question. I don't think there are guys who can affect the passing game consistently, because I don't think Gallimore is that guy. I think he's solid. I think he can be solid. But I don't think he's someone who can affect the passing game consistently enough for me to think he's a first round pick. Now, I'm the same guy that thinks the same of Derrick Brown and Javon Kinlaw. So maybe I'm just stilted on this. Maybe I'm just, too overly biased on this, but that's where I land on this with the Packers.
Yeah. I super disagree about Kinlaw. You and I are in lockstep with Derrick Brown. I think he's a dominant player. I think he's a very good player. I would take him at 30 just cause he's that disruptive. I think he could at least push the pocket, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. I could take him at 30, and there are a lot of evaluators that have him as a top three prospect. I've seen guys that have him as the best player in the draft. I think I can't.
That's madness.
Right. But I'm not going to name names because I can't remember it specifically, but I think
drag
I've seen
them, Ross, drag them.
Yeah. And I mean, he's a very, very good player. He is. I would not do that for a run defender high in the draft. But if at 30 it was like, oh, we'll just take Derrick Brown, you know, I would be like, yeah, okay, well, run defense is fixed, you know, and maybe he can collapse the pocket, and maybe now he allows Kenny Clark to play more three tech, and, you know, like, he would do a lot of things for the defense, and I think you could certainly go worse. Let's talk about Packer people, because, you know, I think we both have a couple of guys, and we're getting a little long. I kind of feared that this would happen because we both like to talk, and this is kind of our only chance to do this so far this offseason. But a couple of guys that you and I both really like in Michael Pittman Jr. and Jack Driscoll, I just want you to kind of wax poetic about those two, and then we'll close up shop here. Why are they such Packer people? And I think this is a next week thing for Packer Report. I'm just going to do a list of 6 to 8 guys from a testing perspective, from a fit perspective, from a character perspective that, you know, I would say, hey, here's a list of 10 guys, and I bet by the end of everything, 2 of them will be Packers.
Yeah. So Michael Pittman Jr. is the kind of player who I think is just tailor-made for Brian Gutekunst, who loves size, speed players. Someone who is 6'4", 225, and runs low 4.5s. I mean, I ran 4.51 at the combine. His physical profile is nearly identical to Kenny Galladay's. Nearly identical in terms of speed score, agility score, burst score, 40 times, size, and they win in a lot of the same ways. You can win with them down the field. And you watch just that Utah game. I mean, just USC Utah last year, Michael Pittman is a top 15 player just based on that one game. It's one of the best single games any player in this draft class has had. Now, obviously, he has to be more than that. You have to have more than one good game, but he has been a productive player. He fits the athletic profile. He moves well enough laterally, had nice agility times, good enough agility times, certainly, and is in that upper echelon of RAS players. That's a statistic that you and I talk about all the time. Yeah, he would be similar in size and then size speed to someone like Alan Lazard. I don't care. I really don't. And I think it allows the Packers to just say, we're going to play basketball. And if you want to have your slot corner, who is usually 5'9", 5'10", go up against Lazard or Galladay, good luck, buddy, because it's not going to work out for you. Now, Jack Driscoll is someone who is also that athletic profile type. and fits their the thresholds that they like, being able to move side to side. The shuttle is one of those numbers that Josh Norris over at Roto World wrote about, that if you reach a certain point with that shuttle number, you're going to be a good player. And Jack Driscoll hits it. Basically, you're going to be a longtime starter in the NFL. He might just flat out be better than the guy playing across from him, Prince Tegawanago, who is getting top 50 type buzz. And yet Jack Driscoll is looked at as a potential day three player. He doesn't lose pass rush reps in the SEC. So it's pretty remarkable. I think Driscoll could be a day one starter for the Packers at right tackle, and you just don't worry about it. I mean, that's how good a player I think he is.
Yeah, and I think that stems from like just basic scouting, right? Okay, well, you got two tackles, and they decide that this guy's playing left and this guy's playing right. Well, what's the immediate reaction? Oh, well, the guy that they have playing right isn't as good.
Right.
And that might not be the case. You know, right tackle and then left tackle are two completely different things. All right, buddy, we've gone over time here. We want to thank, and I just want to make sure we get a chance to do this, want to thank our sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. Right now, guys, they are going through the same thing that we're all going through with coronavirus, with COVID-19. They have a full menu available. They have kind of done things differently now. They're doing delivery, which was not an option before. They are doing takeout, online ordering. They are doing their best to stay afloat. And if you are living in the Green Bay area, please support Stadium View. You guys have been there before on game day, after the game. It's a phenomenal place to go both times. Obviously, Gilbert has the tailgate parties in the morning before the games. Just a phenomenal place to get people together in the Green Bay area, in season, out of season, in the summer. Phenomenal outdoor seating. The renovation has been great. And live music. We will get back to that point in time, folks. But until then, support not just Stadium View, but support local business once, twice, three times a week if your family can afford it. Get takeout from a local business that would normally have restaurant hours because they got to get through this time the same that each and every one of us do. Peter, really appreciate having you on. All right, folks. Catch you next week. Go Pack, go.